Here we go. Welcome to another episode of We Talk Music in Your Ear. I am your host, Mr. Brett Podcast, ready for another great episode. This one I am very excited about because we have an extra special guest. He is the singer. He sang with the Jason Bonham Band. He sang with Lynch Mob. Now he's with Resurrection Kings, but more to the point, what we're here to talk about is his new solo band, Westbound. This is Chaz West. Chaz, how are you doing?
All right, Brett, how are you?
Great, great. Happy to be here.
Great. Yeah, it's nice to chat with you. Definitely.
So we're here to talk about the new album, Westbound, that is the album Volume 1. Easy to remember title.
That's correct. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what's that? That would be...
Yeah, what actually made you go with Volume 1 in this case, other than the fact that it truly is Volume 1?
Right. Well, the obvious is I just want to let the fans know that there'll be more than just one record. It's not just a one-off. And that was why I thought, you know, and it's my first solo record, you know, band where, you know, I'm in the driver's seat. So that's why I thought it was very appropriate.
Now, in this case... let's see. Now, there's a couple of places that I can go here. Let's talk about the band, because you got Roy Z with you, and that by itself is amazing, because what a talent that guy is.
Oh, yeah. I've known Roy for years. You know, we first met when he was playing guitar with Bruce Dickinson, and I was with Jason Bonham. We were on tour in South America, and, you know, we just got to know each other. I mean, after we'd be playing some big, huge show, we'd go to some little bar and hang out and get up and jam and, you know, with the whatever band, you know, they had, local band, a cover band, whatever. And that's how we got to know each other. And we found out we both lived in Southern California. We would run into each other here and there. And then years later, he contacted me about doing the last Tribe of Gypsies record, which I did with, you know, I not only sung on, but I co-wrote with him. So that's how it happened. I knew that he and I had already worked together and we could work together well. So, you know, that's why I thought of him immediately when Serafino contacted me and said he wanted to do just, you know, something just with me after I finished the last Resurrection Kings record. So,
yeah, that's really cool. Now, the rest of the band, you've got Jimmy Burkhard, Jason Cornwell, Dave Marino, and Stephen LeBlanc. So are those guys in Southern California as well?
Yes, they all are, except for Jason. He's the only one who's still on the East Coast. He's in Massachusetts, but he gets out here, you know, quite a bit. So, but yeah, everybody else is Southern California, and we've all known each other for years, you know. I didn't want a bunch of strangers. It was my first, like I said, my first time around in the driver's seat. So I didn't want to go with a bunch of strangers. I wanted guys that, you know, that had that family camaraderie kind of thing. And so that's why, you know, Jimmy Burkhard, I met him through Stephen McGrath, who's a bass player for Billy Idol. And, you know, Jimmy had done like a few, I guess, privates with Billy. And this guy's great, you know. I mean, he's like, you know, he's got a Jimmy Page kind of style, you know, Joe Perry. And I was like, yeah, that's what I need. And Jason Cornwell, you know, I've known him for years too. Great bass player. We played together a few times in a bunch of shows we did in the East Coast. Stephen LeBlanc actually played with Jason Bonham for a while too. He's not technically in the band, but he's on the record as a guest player. And then he'll probably be doing some of the shows that I'm doing. But you know, I wanted to, you know, as they say, keep it in the family. So, you know, Dave Marino. There you go. Dave Marino, you know, also known as Chili. He and I have been bros for 25 years. He's, you know, best known as the drummer for Puddle of Mud. So that's why, like I said, I wanted to keep it, you know, with friends and family kind of thing, which to me is, you know, important.
Yeah, well, I guess, and especially, like you say, with it being your first solo record, you really want to be able to be comfortable to get everything out there, I'll bet.
You got it. That's it.
Now, when I first listened to this album, it was probably last week that I listened to it, and the second that I heard Never Surrender, I thought, this is the best album ever right now, because I loved it.
Wow.
Like,
wow, thank you.
What a great opening track.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Yeah, that was Roy Z and I came up with that. And, you know, it was Smooth Stanley from that point on. Yeah. I mean, thank you. That's great. I mean, you know, and I think it's got a good positive message about, you know, overcoming obstacles and challenges that everybody faces in life, and, you know, and don't give up on your goals and dreams, whatever they may be, you know. And never, you know, never surrender. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those albums, like, when you give it a good listen, that you realize just how singable it is. And because I'll tell you, I can't get Keeper of the Flame out of my head right now.
Oh, really? That's great. That's cool. I know Zia would love to hear that. That's very cool. That's great.
Yeah, it's one of those cases where, like, I'm a big fan of this type of music, you know, that blues-based hard rock. And when you can get one of those songs, and when it just latches on and gives you that kind of earworm thing, it's so much better than some other music where it's just like, where you hear it and you're like, you know that technically it's a good song, but it's not, but it's not staying with you. Yeah.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah. And then there's no hook. See, yeah. I always look for hooks, and, you know, some of the greatest rock songs ever, that's what made them great, because they had hooks, mm-hmm. you know, melodies. I mean, besides some great lyrical content, melodies are important. So I really, you know, thank you for those kind words. I appreciate that.
So when I was poking around doing some research on you, I hit your Twitter account, which is not a terribly active Twitter account.
Yeah, I know.
But so, like, way back in October 23rd of 2016, you had said that you were hitting the studio, you know, on this. So what happened in that, you know?
Well, we started writing, you know, then, and then it kind of, there were some songs we had to scrap because maybe they weren't quite fit what Frontiers wanted. I mean, we were trying to, I guess I was going a little more 70s. They wanted a little more 80s, or, you know, I guess that's, so we didn't have to necessarily change. It was more of adapt, and, you know, they met me halfway, you know, so I guess that's why it took a bit longer. Of course, the record's been done for quite a while. They just put it a little bit on the back burner, but, you know, but it's been done for, you know, a while, about a year. So that's why I'm so excited. It's finally coming out.
I bet
we finished the videos in, I think, March, April. So, you know, May. So, yeah, you know, but that, you know, things take time. I guess, like they say, you know, no wine served before it's time, right? So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, because I guess that especially when it's such a labor of love, you know, you want it to get out there as fast as possible, but at the same time, you also want it to get done right.
Right. Correct. And we had it, and, you know, and you're absolutely right. With the label that, you know, expected a certain genre to fit, you know, and so, you know, we had to, that's part of it, you know, we had to, but it was definitely from the heart and soul, you know. It's just, as with anything, there's always changes, and, you know, I mean, even with screenplays and things like that, some things don't always end up in the finished, as the finished product, you know, so, you know, but, yeah, but I'm very proud of the record, you know, and, you know, it definitely, like I said, it speaks from the heart and soul, and I think it's got a real good positive message, along with some great musicianship and, you know, and vocals and melodies and everything else. It's got a good positive message, which was important to me. So,
yeah, well, one of the things that I noticed, especially when I was watching the video for Never Surrender, and I don't know that I get as good a sense of this on just listening to the album, was just the interplay between Roy Z and Jimmy Burkhart.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially on Never Surrender, right? The dueling guitar solo.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, they killed it on that. It was great. I know. I agree. It was now, like a priest kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So was that something that you were really looking for, was having that dual guitar attack?
No, not at all. That just happened by accident, you know, and it was just kind of like, yeah, this works. That sounds killer, you know, and they played together great. They got on, you know, together really well. So it's like, great. You know, when we wrote the song, though, that was not originally, you know, planned out. So, yeah, it's cool, though, you know, how things work like that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that interests me, then when you talked about what the you were kind of working on 70s and the label wanted some 80s. So what were the
Well,
differences then that you the
I
like
just
what's the
need more
difference between
endpoints.
70s and 80s, I guess,
Well, I
really?
guess, okay.
No,
I guess I
just
want
from
to
your
know a little
perspective
bit.
is what I'm.
Well, from my perspective, I guess I don't want to without mentioning, specific bands. I guess I just was going more of a bluesy kind of hard rock, and then also maybe even getting into a little bit of a heavier, kind of darker kind of thing, sound. And they wanted a little more, commercial. A little. I
Right.
hate using that word, but I mean, it's melodic no matter what. But they wanted a little more, and that was basically, the only thing. But it was. Like I said, it was very natural. It wasn't like I was like, oh, okay, this song works, this one, so we're now this one's not going to work, for us, that kind of thing. So, that was probably the most. Like I said, without mentioning specific band names as influences that we had in mind, I think, the finished product is great. And I'm very happy and pleased with it.
No,
So.
sure, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, it's an excellent album, and you should be very proud of it.
Right.
So I'm interested because I know that you sing for a lot of Led Zeppelin tribute bands. I know you're a huge fan of Led Zeppelin.
Right.
So
That's what I said. That specific band I'm not mentioning.
Oh yes, sorry. That band
It's okay. That
that.
specific, mega band from the 70s, right?
Well, I'm not asking about how they influence. Well, maybe no. What I want to ask is that, like, I know especially when you sang with Jason Bonham,
Right.
there's certain points with your voice where you do like kind of channel Robert Plant a little bit more, and obviously you would do that when you're singing with Moby Dix and stuff like that.
Right.
So like what I'm kind of interested in is, and I think this is like this goes for so many singers because there's a gazillion singers who have been influenced by Robert Plant.
Absolutely.
So how is it then when you sing that you try to like, where's the balancing act of being like, I'm influenced by Robert Plant, but I'm not trying to sound like a clone of Robert Plant?
You're absolutely right. Exactly. I never wanted to be a carbon copy, and that's what, like, even back, I guess, go back to Jason Bonham Band, the biggest compliments I got was, oh, he sounds like Robert Plant, but he also sounds like Chris Cornell and a little like this guy. And that's, and I was really happy to read that, because that's what I wanted to get across. I'm not, I'm not a tribute, guy that's just trying to be a Robert Plant clone, and I mean, yes, the influences that are there. I mean, the natural tone, tonal ability, I guess. But that, like I said, that's all natural. I'm not trying, obviously, it comes out a bit more, I think, when I'm singing Zeppelin songs. But in my own material, I don't think you hear some of that influence. But you also hear other singers too, and that, I'm happy about that. That makes me feel, okay, I've accomplished what I want to get across as a vocalist. I'm not just, he sounds exactly like this guy. You know what I mean? So I don't sound exactly like Robert Plant. There are some other guys that do, and I'm not going to mention those names, but yeah, I mean, because that's what they're trying to do. So, I was actually, even with Bonham, I mean, Jason, when I first got hired, he was basically, I beat out 700 and something singers, and he said, well, it's because you sounded kind of like Robert, but you also sounded like Chris Cornell, and this, and we wanted that, So I always thought, great, I'm on the right track.
Yeah, for sure. Because I found that, and I've actually found that going back and listening to the Jason Bonham Band album, and then listening to the Resurrection Kings, and now into this album, like your voice has changed in that time as well. Like you do sound different
Well,
to
I
me.
matured a bit,
Yeah.
obviously, I think, and maybe more versatile. That was my first record I ever did. I mean, as far as original material goes, besides some demos and things like that, and I think I did an EP, when I was in local bands. But That was my first big break. So yeah, the first time I worked with a major producer. So that, you know, I've learned a lot since then. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I was still green and, you know, a kid. So yeah, I mean, obviously, and what works for the music, I guess I've learned to, you know, adapt my voice to like, okay, go a little more for this style, for this song, because this seems to fit better. You know, you know, I'm fortunate enough to, like I said, to be a versatile vocalist where I don't have to just, well, this is just what he does and that's it. He just sings exactly like this and it's going to be like this in every song, you know. So, and my favorite singers, you know, Robert Plant, you mentioned him, and others were always like that. They were always very versatile and adapted their voices and their melodies to fit the material. So, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Now, is that one of those kind of cases why you've been able to sing with so many great people, is because of that versatility?
I would say, yeah, it's definitely helped. Absolutely. You know, I mean, Jason, because I did that, it opened a lot of doors for me, you know, that got me in the game. And because of that, you know, so I'll always be grateful to him. I'm still able to do it now. And this is the reason why this deal, you know, because I never, the Resurrection Kings thing would have never happened, because how would I have never known Vinny Appice, you know, mm-hmm. and Craig Goldie, you know? And I'd known them for years. I mean, Vinny and I did another record years ago called Three Legged Dog with Carlos Cavazzo and, you know, the late, great Jimmy Bain. So, yeah, absolutely. That definitely helped as far as doing other bands. Like, oh, okay, yeah, you know. But, you know, this, what I really like about this, you know, with Westbound is that, like I said, I'm not just a hired singer.
Yeah. You
know, right? It's the first time I'm in the driver's seat. So, you know, but, you know, of course, you get all the responsibility, too. So, as I always say, you know, be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. So,
But, yeah, that definitely brings that up. So, like, you, when you talk about the driver's seat, like, what is that added responsibility for you?
Well, I mean, first of all, now I'm the one doing all the interviews. You know,
there you go. That's true.
That's true.
You're stuck with me.
I remember for years, Jason doing it. Yeah. And having to be there. And, you know, sometimes early mornings, stuff like that. I mean, I did a few, but it was all about him. And, of course, when I was Lynch Mob, same thing. It's all about George. And, you know, I mean, so that's one aspect, you know. And, of course, everything else as far as, okay, what's the game plan, and even down to set list, okay, right out of set list, and what are we going to do, you know. So, you know, everybody's looking to you. So that's, you know, which, like I said, in a lot of ways, it feels great to have the control, but also it's a lot more responsibility. But, you know, I've worked my way in this business for years now, and I'm in the position where I'm able to do that. And I know what to do and what not to do. So, yeah.
So you're feeling pretty comfortable in the role then, is what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you know, still getting my feet wet, but yes, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it must be nice, though, to have learned from guys like Jason and George in that regard, to be able to say, like, as these are guys who have been in some big bands and right. had some success. So you know, it must be nice to learn. Like, what are some of the most important lessons that you took from the two of them?
Well, I don't, you know, always treat people like, even Ronnie James Dio, I learned from him. Dude, he was like a mentor to me. I loved Ronnie. I met him when I toured in South America when I met Roy Z. Roy was playing with Bruce, you know.
Wow, amazing.
20 years, and we kept in touch. And he kind of took me under his wing, gave me advice, told me what to do, what not to do. And I think he told me, basically, treat people well, you know, no matter who they are. Because, you know, you see the same people on the way down as you do on the way up, you know. And he said that, you know, that was one of the things I learned. As far as, you know, burning bridges, unfortunately, some artists do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you try not to do that. Don't be disrespected, but don't try. And also, what was the other thing? Don't follow trends, you know, stick to what you know, what your heart and soul, what you feel, what's real, you know. Those are two things I can think of just off the top of my head. I think also about having the band camaraderie. I mean, try to keep it so, you know, you're really like a family. And, you know, as opposed to just one guy, you know, this guy's in this month, he's out next month, he's in this month, he's out, you know, because that's, you know, that's what's going to keep, that's, look at Aerosmith. I mean, yeah, they mm-hmm. broke up for a bit, but I'm using that as an example, but, you know, they broke up for a bit, but they're, you know, they got back and with the original guys. And families, you know, families fight sometimes. That happens, right?
Yes, you know, absolutely. Siblings,
exactly. But that doesn't mean the love and is not there. And you realize, you know, it's the same kind of thing. Even though it's a business, it's a business. Business is like a marriage, you know.
Yeah.
And you kind of realize you need each other, you know. And that's the thing. Don't let your ego get out of control where you think, oh, it's all about me. I don't need anybody else. I guess that was another thing I learned. So, you know. And you're only as strong as your weakest link. So, you know.
Yeah, so. There's no doubt about it. When you talk about like especially Aerosmith, you know, that band by itself. Yeah, I mean they went through a couple of other guys in there, but the chemistry that the original members, you know, or that the core group has,
right,
that you know of Aerosmith is just so important.
Agreed. Absolutely. And it shows, and you can still see it. You know, I've seen a couple videos where you could tell they look like they're kind of pissed off at each other on stage, like Steven and Joe at one point years back. Still played great, but they're like, giving each other looks, you know, like, oh, fuck you, you know, and I understand that. but musically, the chemistry is definitely still there. Yeah. And when you've got that, you want to hold on to it. And I felt it a few times, and you know when it's there and when it's not. So, you know, just like in a personal relationship, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know when the chemistry's there or if it's not, you know. So, yeah, it's the same kind of thing on stage. You know, just gonna be a, you know, I don't know what else to say, but that's basically it. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the last time that I saw Ronnie James Dio, he was playing with Heaven and Hell.
Right.
And now...
With Vinny, yeah.
Yeah, and now that was a really interesting show to me because the thing was is that Ronnie was up front, but you could see that like, Tony and Geezer weren't actually talking. Like they were really kind of off to the side. So you could tell that there was some level, like from a fan perspective, you could tell that there was some level tension going on. But Ronnie was doing just his level best to try to make sure that nobody noticed. You know,
exactly, because he's a total professional. Yeah, he was, you know. I agree. Yeah.
And if there's one thing that I will never, ever forget about Ronnie, it's seeing that show and just remembering the effort that he made above and beyond everyone else.
Yeah, I could see that, totally. I mean, I'll visit, you know, like Vinny told me, you know, with Geezer, with Tony and Geezer, it was all business. It was business, you know. But, yeah, Ronnie was more personable. And he cared more about, I think, I don't know Tony and Geezer person, but I think he cared about the fans,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the people, and, you know, and he didn't care who you were, you know, it didn't matter. It wasn't like, well, you know, you're not worthy kind of deal, you know, he didn't care, you know, I mean, he really appreciated the love and support, and, you know. He was an incredible man. He really was, you know, and not only on his talent, but is a human being. You know, at least, you know, hanging out with him, and it was just, you know, nothing but positive. And you know, he gave me advice. And what he did, he spent hours with me. He didn't have to, mm-hmm. you know, telling me, hey, what to do, what not to do. And, you know, hey, you know. And I'll always appreciate that. And it's, you know, it's made an impact in my life.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Like I've not heard anything bad. I mean, when we talked to Craig Goldie, I mean, some of those stories that he has about Ronnie are just amazing. So I love hearing those stories because it really.
I mean,
besides like he was such a, you know, such a big figure, for not a very big man, but at the same time he was huge, and for a fan like me. You know, he was larger than life. And so, but when I hear about him and the niceness and the humanity and stuff like that. I mean, it just makes me love his music that much more.
Oh yeah, he was so down to earth. That's the thing. You know, yeah, like you said, for a little man, he was huge on stage, but off stage, he was, you know, he was just average Joe, great guy. Just he'd talk to anybody. He had a great sense of humor, enjoyed life, you know. And you know, it didn't matter who you were. So, you know, I think that, you know, that made him a very special human being.
So I'm interested about your stage persona. Like, what kind of a singer on stage would you consider yourself? Like, are you quite active in that regard? And
well, I think I am to a point, but I don't let it get to the point where that's more important than the singings and the melodies and things like that. But yeah, I'm definitely a showman. I mean, I don't like just, I can't personally, I just can't just stand there and sing, you know, even if I tried, you know. I remember years ago, I can go back to like early Bonham, and I had broken my ankle. We had to do a tour and I had a cast on, and you know, it was like for about 6 weeks before. So then I was, you know, I was like being able to get around on crutches and one foot, just, I was doing okay by that point. And I was like, okay, I'll be all right. But they were like, well, just sit down at least, you know, for most of the show. And I swear the first night, I think I sat down for a few songs. After that, it was impossible. And because I start getting into it and feeling it. And I, you know, I moved around. I learned to move on one foot, you know. Yeah. So, you know, I got to move. I got it because I feel it. But I'm not, you know, I'm not Mick Jagger. I'm not running. I mean, that guy's amazing. He's like running a marathon, you know, on stage. But definitely, you know, move and, you know, move to the music. Yeah. Well,
and there's no doubt that the Rolling Stones could run a marathon given the size of their stages. So.
Oh yeah. You know, my God, you know. So, yeah, but then there's other singers I see like, oh my God, it's like, have you fallen asleep on the microphone? I mean, haven't moved from that. It's like, you know, you got your mark and you hasn't moved off that mark.
Yeah.
So, and that's just boring for the audience because it's part of it. It's being a front man, not just a vocalist, a front man. You know, it's a show. People pay their hard-earned money to see this. And yeah, you know, they just want to hear the music. They can listen to the record or, you know, online or whatever, you know, download the songs. You know, they pay to see a show. So, to me, that's part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no question about it. Like, you know, it's always such an interesting thing. Like, when I'm seeing a singer and there's a certain charisma to them, and it sounds sometimes you don't have to move, but like that right. much, but there's still a charisma. Where
there's a charisma, there's something exactly.
And it's
as
super hard
to looking like they're bored.
Yeah,
song.
Yeah, for yeah. sure. Like it's so hard to quantify until you can actually see it. But when you right. do see it, it's like and you know Steve Perry or Steven Tyler was exactly like that mm-hmm. for me. Where it's just like, oh damn, now this guy's
exactly.
got it.
Oh hell yeah! And Robert Plant was a great front. He's a great front man, not only vocals but a great front man. It's another example. I mean, you know, yeah, Steven Tyler is, you know, incredible. Absolutely. But you're right. He knows there's times to just stand there. But he's still got that aura. He's still got that presence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be running around. I mean, unless that's what you feel, if it calls for it. but, you know, anyway.
Now, you've got a release party on the 22nd for the album. Do you...
Well, it's actually the 21st.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't know. Which one were you referring to?
Well, I had just been on Facebook, and maybe it was just the fact that the album was being released.
It just came out. I think it just came out. Yeah. We were going to do a release party, just listening party. You're talking about the Bar 1200 at the Sunset Marquee Hotel?
Yeah, that's right.
That's the one. Yeah. That's just a listening party.
Okay.
That's, you know, I've been going there for so many years. I used to live right near there. It used to be called the Whiskey Bar. And I first went there with Jason Bonham. And, you know, I mean, I met Julian Lennon there and Jeff Beck and everybody. I used to hang there with Slash and Mike Inez and, you know, and the guy, Chris Robinson and, you know, Matt Sorumis. It was the place. Then it, you know, now it's become Bar 1200 and I'm friends with the manager. So he's like, well, I played him the first single and he loved it. And he was just like, come on, let's do a release party here. And I went, okay. He goes, he's got some video machine, you know. He's like, you know, just, you know, come on, I'll play the record, I'll play the videos, you know, and have some drinks and have some fun. And I was like, okay, sounds good. So it's actually going to be on the 21st, Thursday, but the record comes out at midnight, so it's kind of appropriate there. And then on the 23rd, Randy Rhoads' sister, Kathy Rhoads, and her husband, Rich, have a place called D'Argenzio Wine Room in Burbank. And it's in the back. They've got a whole room, and it's almost like a mini museum to Randy. They've got his, some guitar and pictures and, you know, outfits, stage costumes. And so we're going to do a little, like, listen to the record there, and then do an unplugged performance of a couple of the songs and maybe a few other surprises. And then on the 26th, Tuesday the 26th, will be the official first performance of Westbound at the Ultimate Jam Night, which is at the Whiskey every Tuesday, or most Tuesdays. We're going to open that at 9 o'clock. And it's the perfect night for it, because the theme, they have a theme each, you know, each week. The theme that week is a tribute to Jimmy Page. So, you know, so it was just, I know, at the time, it couldn't have been, you know, I was like, oh my God, are you serious? You know, so we're going to do, you know, songs from the record, perform, you know, electric performance, and then probably a few Zep songs, you know, in the set too, because it's part of my background and what I still do that, you know, so that's what's planned right now for the release week. And then there'll be, you know, other shows later, quite a few more in the next couple of months. So,
yeah. Do you have any of the tour booked yet, or is it just kind of it's still being set up?
It's still being set up right now, so I can't really say exactly, you know, what's confirmed. But we're talking, you know, we'll definitely be out of state. I mean, throughout the United States, and hopefully, you know, in Europe later in the year also. So, yeah, United States, Canada, and Europe. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love it if you managed to come into Calgary. That'd be great. I would totally be
there.
I
would love that. I haven't been there in years. I had fun the last time I was there. It was years back. But yeah, I had a lot of fun. Yeah, you guys are great. You like your beers. I remember that.
Well, you know, Canadian beer is better than American
Canadian beer.
Canadian
beer, exactly. I know, exactly. I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, because like, especially when you get over to Europe, I mean, some of those festivals, they like I expect you'd be looking at those, because some of them are fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, we are. You know, and that's what, you know, we're working on trying to be set up. Hopefully, you know, maybe by, you know, summer, early fall, we'll get on some of those. I mean, maybe we'll get on some one. I mean, unfortunately, the record, if it had been out last year, it probably would have been easier. Unfortunately, because it's not out till, you know. This month, it's some of the festivals are already booked, but you know, there's still a possibility we're going to be able to get on some of them before the end of the year.
Yeah, I suppose that's an interesting case of like when the album gets released, and how easy it is to get into festivals. So, again, things that fans don't necessarily think about.
They don't, exactly. That's the thing. Until you actually get into the nitty gritty business of it, that changes everything. You got it right.
So I'm interested in what kind of merchandise you're going to have available when you're on tour.
Actually, it's funny. I have a meeting tonight with the one about doing T-shirts. So just, you know, the original, you know, pressing for the record release week. We're going to do some. Oh, yeah, we're going to have T-shirts. We'll have it, you know, merchandise. We're going to have CDs. I mean, well, you know, you go through Frontiers to that. But yeah, obviously. But T-shirts, you know, tank tops. I even want to have some, you know, women's thong panties with, if you've seen the logo, I think it's perfect. Yeah. The dagger. With the dagger and the Westbound, right? I think that would be brilliant, you know. So I want to definitely do that too. We'll have it available. And we'll have this stuff available on the website soon also. You know, it's all being set up tonight. Like I said, I've got a meeting in a few hours about that. So,
yeah, because for sure, like you're not necessarily. It's a little hard to find some of your stuff on the internet. So I assume that you're kind of trying to build that stuff out right now.
That's correct. We're trying to set it all up right now. It's all being worked out. Yep. You got it.
Yeah, again, you want to do it right?
That's right, Brett. Do it right or don't do it at all. You got it. I've seen things, so many things be done half-assed. Yeah, so, yeah.
Oh, it's so true. I mean, some of the websites that I've seen for bands, again, won't name any names, but like when you go on there and it's just like did you create this in the 90s?
Right, exactly. It looks so amateurish and it's like, really? And you want to be taken seriously? You know, but not only fans, but promoters and things like that. Really? I know. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I know our website is still in the process of being completely set up. It's up and running, but it's still, things are being added to it. So, yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Including, and you know, the record release information she must have just put that out, you know, like last couple hours as far as the record release thing, because I didn't even think it was online yet. So
there you go.
So, that's great.
Things are working without you knowing.
Doing well. Exactly. It's like, great. Okay.
That's the way it's supposed to be. Delegation, man.
Exactly right. You got it, bro. Yeah.
So anyway. I appreciate your time a lot, and I know that I'm coming close to the end of my time. But if it's okay, I'll just ask a couple more questions.
Sure, be my guest.
I'm interested in some of your favorite memories of the LA hard rock scene.
Well, you know, I got out here late. I mean, I just saw the tail end of it when it was really happening. So I didn't really get to meet a lot of the name, you know, quote rock stars until after I'd gotten the gig with Jason Bonham. I guess a few guys, like I knew Steven Adler, I knew him, and because I got here like the 90s, you know, like early 90s, early mid 90s, and it was pretty much at the tail end of it. I mean, early 90s was pretty much done, you know, after, you know, the grunge Seattle thing hit. But I got to know some of these guys, and then of course after, you know, I got the Bonham gig, you know, that everything changed. Next thing I know, I'm hanging out with my idols, you know.
Yeah.
You guys, I had, you know, his uncles, you know. I mean, guys, you know, we're talking legends. Roger Daltrey, you know, Rod Stewart, people like that. I'm like, oh, my God, you know. John Entwistle, Chris Squire, you know, from Yes. The late, great Chris Squire. But I did, you know, like I would see, you know, I got to, you know, I know Steven Adler, but, you know, I saw some of it and yeah, it was pretty crazy. You walk up and down the boulevard and we used to have flyer wars. So we used to call it. Because everybody, you know, handing out flyers and then you'd be putting them on the, on the poles, the telephone poles. And one band would come and you'd use like a staple gun. Well, the one band would come along and they'd rip it off and put theirs over it. So we said, well, we're going to fucking show them. So we would get glue and we would glue it on. We'd go out like, you know, late at night during the week and, you know, when there wasn't as many people out and we would glue all over the other band's flyers. So the Flyer Wars days, it was funny. And there used to be flyers like, you know, it's thick, you know, like 6 inches on the telephone poles, up and down Sunset Boulevard and everything. Yeah, those were fun. Like I said, I saw the tail end of it and then everything changed like boom, overnight.
Yeah.
You know, and next day I was like, okay, you know, I guess the scene's not really happening here anymore. So I ended up starting to do like, I was doing covers on the side and I was doing like ski lodges and, you know, stuff like that, and then still trying to do another original thing, and then that's when I got the call about you know, Jason Bonham Band. You know, I beat out 700 and something singers, and, you know, the rest is history, as they say. So I got to see some of it, and then, of course, after the Bonham, I got to know everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah, because I know, because I mean, you're amazing for my 6 degrees of separation. I'll tell you, it's just like,
oh, thank you. Yeah, you know? I mean, it's weird. I mean, because you know, you're playing with a son of a deceased legend, and it's just like everybody, and you know, with the exception of, I talk about it, it's like, I think that with the exception of Alex Van Halen, let me think, who else can I think of? Joey Kramer, Roger Taylor, I don't know. Off the top, Tommy Lee. I've jammed with Tommy, but I played with like almost every major drummer between you know, Bonham and then of course the Bonzo Bash that I've been doing, you know, I do every year with Brian Tichy, my bandmate, who's also, I don't know if you know, he's on the record too.
Yeah,
he's
what is it? Two songs
that he co-wrote with me. Yeah, I mean, you know, I've played with like almost every major hard rock drummer you could think of. You know, I mean, so, you know, I'm really fortunate in that way. Yeah,
what a fantastic career. And yet, you know, I mean, stunningly few albums for such an amazing career overall.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, you know, people don't mind records as much as they used to. I mean, I think it's starting to change, but, you know, actually, because albums are even back now. People are buying vinyl again.
Yeah, so, yeah, for sure.
In fact, I know this record's going to be on vinyl. I found out, and I'm like, really? Finally, I have a real record deal. I remember, you know, strive for years, struggle to get a record deal. And on the bottom thing, it's like, well, you're in, and you know, we're signed to Sony Music, and you're touring them. I'm like, all right. But of course, then it was a CD deal. They weren't doing vinyl in the '90s, you know. So I'm like, fuck! All these years of struggling to get a record deal with a major label, and I got the deal. But you know, I'm with a band that's got a deal, but it's not a record. It's going to be a CD. So finally, I feel like, okay, first time around, I'm in the driver's seat, and it's a record. Great.
Yeah.
So
vindication.
You know, the option, at least, right?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
So.
Well, that reminds. Yeah, I love your belt buckle that you wear in the music video for Never Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Anybody under 35 has no fucking clue what it is.
That's right. It just looks like a cool design to them. But,
right.
But, oh, like, I know what it is. Yeah.
Must be a big, you know, Trekkie or something. I don't know. He's into UFOs. Yeah. Something like that. That's what they think. I know. Yeah.
Don't you worry. I'm plenty old enough to know what that is. Yeah.
I got you, bro.
Awesome. Well, Chaz West, you know, you've been so much fun. I've enjoyed spending time with you. This is the chance. So why don't you plug where to find the album and everything for that before we take our leave?
Okay. So this is Chaz West from Westbound. Please check out the first, you know, my debut record, Volume 1, which should be available everywhere online. Frontiers Music, Spotify, iTunes, what's the other one?
Google? Yeah, is that a thing?
I'm forgetting one. Aren't I forgetting one? There's so many.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, it's available, you know. Westbound Volume 1, I hope you love it and feel it and, as you know, enjoy it as much as we enjoyed writing it and recording it. And look forward to seeing you out there on the road, you know. The long and winding road throughout the world in 2019 and 2020. And it's been great chatting with you, Brett. Definitely. Thank you for, you know, all your listeners for all the support and love and appreciate it. And we'll see you out there.
Well, I totally urge everybody to go and listen to it and buy Volume 1 because it's an awesome album. I totally enjoyed it, and I completely look forward to Volume 2 now. So
absolutely, there's already little, you know, ideas and things that be thrown around about that already. So absolutely, but I'm always writing, always got ideas. So
that's definitely important. Gotta stay busy.
You got it. Keeps me out of trouble. So.
Awesome. Well, Chaz West, thank you so much.
All right,
and the
Brad.
Best of luck in the future.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It's great talking to you. All the best.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Cheers.
All right.